she looks so strong. Then you fade away. The sun will blind my eyes. I love you anyway. Thirsty for your smile. I want you for.
You are listening to Smile Politely Radio. SmilePolitely.com is the place to go for all things local. Arts, music, food and drink, tech opinions, culture, cartoons, and much more. You just heard Ride play Vapor Trail, and Ride, of course, is going to be at the Pygmalion Festival coming up in a couple weeks here in town. I'm your co-host, Rebecca, and I'm joined today by co-host Cope. How are you, Cope?
I am good.
Wonderful. And today we're also very fortunate to be joined by Kay Emmert, who is a lecturer in the English department at UAUC and also the lead negotiator for the Non-Tenure Faculty Coalition, Local 6546. And we're going to get to the bottom of all of those numbers on today's show. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks. Yeah. So we are going to talk today about the Non-Tenure Faculty Coalition. And to get us started, could you just kind of unpack what that term means for us?
Okay. So non-tenure track faculty are employed at the university level, but they're people who are not qualified to get tenure. So often they are employed on year-to-year contracts, sometimes shorter, sometimes semester by semester or months by months. And our union, NTFC Local 6546, represents about 500 faculty at the university. We're made up of a beautiful variety of different people. We're broken up into groups like we're teachers, so a lot of us teach a lot of classes. Non-tenure track makes up about 35 to 40% of all undergraduate classes that are taught at the university. So chances are, if you have a kid at the university, they will take a non-tenure track faculty member's class. We have researchers who are in every part of research at the campus, and we have clinicians as well who teach in a non-traditional setting.
So I think when people think about being an instructor at a university, they tend to think of it as a very important and stable job, especially because you get all of those extra letters behind your name, the PhD and all kinds of things like that. Could you talk a little bit about some of the experiences of the non-tenure faculty specifically? Like you mentioned that often they're on year-to-year contracts. Could you talk a little bit about what that means in terms of, I don't know, life, employment stability, things like that?
I think that when people hear faculty and university faculty, they envision people who are paid really well. They envision people who maybe are a little less connected with the realities of life. non-tenure track faculty, and if you're familiar with that group, people imagine that they are all like fresh out of grad school, inexperienced, and they're going to be temporary and they're going to move on. UIUC's that's less true than at other places. I would say that a great portion of the non-tenure track faculty at the university are what I like to refer to as careers. This is their career. They have no intention of moving on to something else. They have families here. I mean, they, it's not like Chicago where people want to move to this vast city and that's why they're there and they're just looking for any job they can get. If people come to Champaign-Urbana, chances are they're going to stay. So people think that we're very well paid and there certainly are a number of non-tenure track faculty who are well paid in certain departments, but I would say that the vast majority of us, you would be shocked at how little we are paid. And in fact, by unionizing, it has the drastic and unfortunate effect of freezing our wages. So as long as bargaining continues, our members will not be able to get raises. And for some people, this has created harsh realities. I mean, they're trying to support families. They were counting on some of the raises that were promised right before we certified. And, you know, just a week ago, for example, one of my colleagues, we were playing softball down at Eisner Field, and he had his bike stolen. And, you know, this touched us very greatly because we knew that this was the way that he got around. It was his primary mode of transportation. So I think that people assume that, well, why do faculty need to unionize? They're already well taken care of. But when you talk to faculty as much as I do, and you start to hear the very serious troubles that they have and the ways that they are often ignored, then you realize that that persona doesn't really apply to a great deal of people. And even if it applies to just one person, it's worth addressing. And so we came together to address these inequities. Because a lot of us tried doing it through the current channels, and even as a local, we attempt to solve problems at every level of the university that we can. If it can be done through the Senate, we've done that. If it can be done through HR, we do that. If it can be done at the departmental level, you know, individuals would do that. And at a certain point, people got tired of going through all these different levels and months going by, and maybe a little bit was changed to help that particular situation, but usually not. And overall, nothing has been done to change the overall conditions facing all of us.
So you were talking a bit about the situations of faculty who don't have tenure, kind of in general, but maybe in particular at UIUC. Could you speak a little bit to what in the culture of universities has led us to this place, which is a long story, I know, but thinking about, there's a lot of, for those of us who are involved in higher education, there's lots of talk about how higher education has changed mm-hmm. since, you know, the good old bad old days, I guess. And so could you kind of speak to, in your view, what has changed and why, and how it specifically impacts non-tenure faculty at UAUC?
Yeah, and at some universities or colleges, this is still true. And this is the way it was, that non-tenure track positions or adjunct positions were created to fill temporary gaps at universities. So maybe a tenure track faculty member retires suddenly and there's all these classes and all this work that needs to be done for a year or two while they do a search. That is becoming less true. I mentioned that there's 500 of us. That is certainly not a temporary number. Instead, what we're seeing as a result of the national trend of corporatization of higher education is that as PhDs graduate, they're not getting tenure track jobs. And of course, we're often, unions are often challenged by this idea that we're trying to protect people who are not worthy. And that's certainly not the case. But our university alone is is behind by over 500 tenure track jobs. They're supposed to be replacing and they're behind schedule on that. But where are all these PhDs going? If they're not going to tenure track jobs, they're going to non-tenure track jobs. And so what we're getting are people who are just as qualified to be in tenure track jobs, but they're being filtered into these positions with less protection. Like I said, have year-to-year contracts and often don't even know if they're going to have a job even once that job has begun. For example, the Board of Trustees just met yesterday to approve, supposedly the minutes aren't out yet, to approve the hiring of faculty for this academic year. Well, as you know, this academic year has already begun. We've been working for a month without any binding contract saying that we are employees and we have a right to a paycheck, which in 4 days we should be getting a paycheck and all of us are holding our breaths waiting to find out if we actually are going to be employees. So there are less protections. And since this group of faculty has grown so quickly, so fast, and so much, there really isn't a structure to support it. There isn't a structure to create the professional atmosphere that faculty need in order to do their jobs well, in order to protect education as they wish to. There are protections that are clearly for tenure track faculty, like academic freedom, rights to evaluations, paths to promotions, that make sure that there's an objective way of rewarding and keeping the best of the best, and making sure that the people who know the field are making the decisions so that the best decisions for their students are the ones happening. But these kind of protections is very shaky about how much of that crosses over to non-tenure track faculty. And a lot of times it just boils down to who's your head or who's your dean in your department and how they feel. How they feel about non-tenure track faculty, how much, how many of us there are in the department. If there's just a few, then they may not get as much voice as they should. So what we're seeing are people who are doing a lot of the same work as many tenure track colleagues, and they're just not getting the same amount of voice in the structure. And I see this as a true problem. Like I said, we teach a large percentage of the undergraduate classes. Somewhere around 35 to 40% is taught by faculty not on the tenure track. And what that does is, without the same level of voice or any voice, the people who are working with undergraduates the most are excluded from structures of decision-making power. That means if there is a tutoring center that is there purely to help students as they learn, we have a large international undergraduate population, and if there's a center that is available to, and currently there isn't, if there were a center there to simply tutor and help those students, it might not bring in a lot of money. It would be a drain on money. But those of us who work with students every day see the day-to-day problems as a result of not having those services, despite the drain on money. And so the advocates for our students are cut out of that system of decision-making. And we see that, and we have to deal with it on a daily basis. So our university talks a lot about excellence. And I think what we often hear that word associated with is groundbreaking research, groundbreaking ideas and departments being made. But the kind of excellence I myself focus on teaching, I'm concerned about, is the day-to-day normal kind of excellence that you see when a student is faced with a real challenge and they have the support they need to come out of that challenge in a positive way. And what I've seen occasionally is when they don't have that support, they see that challenge and they fail. And it's not because they're unwilling or they're incapable. It's because they had no net. And I see that as a direct result of excluding faculty who are doing the day-to-day work from those decision-making conversations. So I think that many of us came together to form a union because we were being excluded, and we wanted to be included in these conversations, not just for ourselves, but for our students, for the direction that research is taking, to make sure that our research is protected and not dictated by corporate sponsors. So I think that we aren't doing this out of a sense of selfishness or preservation. We're doing this out of a need to preserve what we love about education, mm-hmm. What we love about research, and what we love about learning. And we're not seeing that voice in these rooms where these decisions are being made. Mm-hmm. And creating a union gives us the legal right to sit down at the table and be listened to, at the very minimum. Mm-hmm. And that's a really powerful thing. And if nothing else, and I hear a lot of arguments against unions. I talk to faculty of all different kinds of opinions. But if nothing else, our local is built on the grounds of democracy. Mm-hmm. I'll say again, I'm a faculty member of this union, and I'm the lead negotiator. There isn't some staff person on loan from the American Federation of Teachers doing this job for us. The people who make the decisions about what we do in the bargaining room or what we do as a union is not being dictated to us by people with $100,000 salaries. Those decisions are being made by faculty just like me. And all it takes is for people to show up, sit down, and everyone has a vote in what happens in the union. And we want to see that spread to the university, too.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you are the lead negotiator for the current bargaining that's happening. And so could you talk a little bit about the status of bargaining currently, and also maybe what in the NTFC's ideal contract, what kind of protections and provisions would be included?
We are now a little over 11 months into bargaining. Now, typically, a first contract probably takes at least 12 months, but it's closer to two years to create. We have seen very little progress at the table. We've been bargaining for 11 months, and we've been meeting as often as the administration's bargaining team will agree to. Problems that we have seen.
How frequently is that? Just to
The frequency is about once every 2 weeks. Mm. And each
That's
session.
That's like a ton of meetings, and if it's been 11
it
months.
It feels like a lot of meetings, but when you consider how much is done during those meetings, it's not enough. So each session may be about 3, maybe 4 hours. We'll take this last session for an example. We had one topic we wanted to talk about, the grievance procedures, which is a cornerstone to protecting any rights that we gain through bargaining. and the administration's bargaining team caucused, so they went in their own room and deliberated for 2 hours and 15 minutes out of the 3.5 that we had. So very little is being done at these bargaining sessions. Now, we've asked them to meet more often for longer periods of time, but they've said they just can't meet more than once every 2 weeks, and sometimes that's stretched to once every 3 weeks. So, you know, we've said we'll bargain on the weekends, we'll bargain at night, we'll bargain all day. we'll do anything that we can to get more progress, but we can't make them agree. So I'm deeply troubled by how little we're able to get them to meet with us. Now, the core subjects that we are looking at, that we're really hoping to get, is just, when you look at it, is very basic structural things. Evaluations. Access to evaluations for every faculty member. It might surprise you to know that 500 faculty at the campus may or may not have access to an annual evaluation. And it's not like we can ask for less than an annual evaluation because we are 1 year contracts. So what are those decisions being based on, if not on an evaluation process? So evaluations and everything that comes out of them, professional development, promotions, paths to multi-year contracts, so that departments can plan what work is done and for longer stretches of a time, you know? So we're looking for greater access to shared governance. We have some departments where non-tenure track faculty have access and other departments where they're denied access to even sitting in on department meetings. So what we're looking for is, there are some of the basic protections of a contract, you know, the right to grieve problems, rights to academic freedom we're having a real trouble with. The administration's bargaining team has said, you know, we don't really know what academic freedom means for your group, but we don't have to know what it means. Mm-hmm. And this was really troubling to us. Because we feel that academic freedom is one of those things that is in flux with this group of faculty. Some departments, I think, don't know how it applies to us. But I think our biggest concern is that there has to be an objective structure for making decisions about who gets hired, who gets rehired, who gets promoted, who gets raises, who gets merit. And it should be based on more than what's happening right now, which is pretty much ISIS forms, which is the student evaluations that happen at the end of the semester. But we currently don't have an expert or a supervisor, you know, working with us, telling us, yes, this is working well, or no, we need to develop this further. And so it's problematic for our members because we want to do a good job, right? And we have no indication of where we are in that. We want to do better jobs. We want to improve. We want to move forward. And we're facing a black, dark room. We don't know where to step forward. And it's also problematic for our students. We want to make sure that we're doing the best for them. And we want to make sure that they're getting the best education possible. But right now, there isn't a process for that. So what we're looking for is very simple. We're looking for ways to create security, security for our members, but security for our university as well. You know, this year is a perfect example. I know that Rauner has a lot to do with that, but you can't say that our departments are secure in the jobs that they have to do if they don't know if they're going to have enough people to do the work that they have to do, right? A month after the school, the semester has begun. So we're looking for basically the right for each faculty member upon request to have one annual evaluation, that the procedures and criteria for that be made by departments in association with the non-tenure track faculty in that department. This is a very basic step, you know, just get the criteria and work it out with the non-tenure track faculty who are doing the work. And from there, everything else creates a better, stronger university through this group of people, because all of a sudden you have the ability to promote the best. You have the ability to retain the best. You have the ability to improve all the work that they are doing through professional development and through promotion. So I would also say that our members care a lot about, you know, everybody says, oh, they just want money, right? And yeah, salary is important, especially if you consider, like, what is going to attract people to Urbana-Champaign, right? I think that it has a great reputation, this campus. My students are very proud to go to this university. I'm very proud to teach in this department. But when people are choosing what city they want to live in, right, we see nationally that universities in smaller towns have to pay their people more to attract them here, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'll go somewhere else. but more than that's happening. Things have not been kept up. And what I mean by that is I work with someone who's been here for 25 years. And he has collected materials that would take me at least 5 years to collect. That kind of knowledge and experience is vastly important. And he's making less than I am, and I've only been here for 4 years. Mm-hmm. These sorts of problems, retention, keeping up with inflation, just keeping up with cost of living, mm-hmm. is not being addressed. And we want to make sure that people can live. I mean, it's weird to say that about someone who teaches at a university. Mm-hmm. But that's the sort of reality we're facing because of the corporate model. They're trying to create, well, they, who's they? What's happening is this effect where you have this group of faculty who are interchangeable and faceless. And that's what happens in a corporate structure. And that does not create excellence.
Well, okay, thank you so much for joining us this evening to talk about non-tenure faculty, the NTFC, Local 6546 in particular, and also about a little bit about American education as well.
Thank you. And I'd like to say that if you'd like to get more involved or just see what we're all about, we have a brand new website, and it is it's local6546.org. So you can get more involved there or just send us an email and let us know that you believe in what we're trying to do.
And the podcast of this show will be going up on the Smile Politely website, right?
Yep, that's correct. All right, so thanks so much again, Kay, and thanks, Cope, for joining me in the studio today. You've been listening to Smile Politely Radio. SmilePolitely.com is the place to go for all things local, arts, music, culture, food and drink, tech, opinion, cartoons, and more. And to take us out, we're going to listen to Purity Ring play Fine Shrine, and Purity Ring will also be at this year's Pygmalion Fest in a couple of weeks. Have a good evening.